Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Right now, at the Jewish Museum, there are paintings by Matisse, Picasso, Léger, and Cézanne all hanging together in one exhibit. While that may not sound remarkable for a New York art museum, it is truly a miracle that these paintings hang where they do today. That's because these works of art were looted by Nazi forces just before or during World War II. Many were taken from the private collections of prominent Jewish citizens, while others were looted from gallerists and artists themselves. Some of this art, deemed degenerate by Nazi forces, languished in storage. Some was selected for the personal collection of Nazi officers. Some was destroyed. But thanks to sustained efforts from men and women around the globe, some working at great personal risk, many of these precious pieces of art were recovered, and some were even restituted to their original owners or their descendants. That process still continues today. The exhibit at the Jewish Museum walks you through this history and tells the stories of the individuals who own the art displayed. It's titled Afterlives, Recovering the Lost Stories of Looted Art. It's running at the Jewish Museum through January 9th. And here to tell us more about it are the curators of the show, Sam Sakharov. Hi, Sam.
Hi there.
And Darcy Alexander. Hi, Darcy.
Hi, good afternoon.
Darcy, why was Afterlives the right title for this exhibit?
Oh, well, the title itself gets to something very fundamental about the exhibition, which is that even though we're talking about a history that's now, 75 years old, it continues to live with us today. These objects reverberate with those histories in the present moment. So the exhibition really delves into, how these objects managed to survive under some extraordinary circumstances. And indeed, many seem to have nine lives as they moved through time. But the idea of afterlives really is the perpetuation of this history into the present moment.
And Sam, these artworks are from all around Europe. They were taken, transported all around the globe. How does it feel to have all of these hanging together in one space?
Yeah, it's very moving, as you can imagine. One of the things that we managed to do in the show is to reunite works of art and other kinds of looted cultural property that have actually shared the same physical space before. We reconstructed rooms from Nazi storage depots, from Allied collecting points, and really, brought together some incredible works of art that sort of, you feel like they know each other, as it were. And when you're walking around the galleries, seeing these incredible objects, at times you can feel that they're kind of recollecting an earlier moment in their histories. And it's very moving to share the space with them, especially knowing what they've been through.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up. Darcy, as you stand in front of, museum goers are going to stand in front of pieces of work that were, some had been personally selected by Hitler to go in his Führer Museum. Some hung in his home. And that's really a chilling thought, an upsetting thought. How do you think being aware of that history either changes or has an impact on this experience with the art? And how did you all discuss that?
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge point of discussion for us because, when you look at an artwork, and this just applies to any artwork, it could be a contemporary piece, it could be a piece from that period of time, you don't really know what it's been through. You can appreciate everything about those aspects of the work on the surface, like a beautiful Picasso painting that we have, small, gorgeous study, a Matisse painting, classic Matisse from 1939, these bold colors and black outlines, just, a beautiful painting in and of itself. But then when you learn that, Hitler's right-hand man had that very same painting hanging on his walls, it does affect how we understand these objects. And I think part of what we're trying to do with the exhibition is to enable visitors to enjoy the beautiful aesthetics of these items, but also to understand them in a different way, that these objects have passed through many different hands, and the backdrop of the story is really a story of just this vast and relentless pillaging of Jewish collections. And when I speak of collections, I'm not just talking about some of the fine art collections, but the show also explores work that was in synagogues and in private homes that was looted as well.
Sam, how did you approach putting this exhibit together sensitively when asking families to borrow recovered works of art?
Yeah, well, it actually ended up being a really beautiful experience in a lot of cases. One of the works that we are fortunate enough to include is a painting by the German painter Max Pechstein that was looted from a man named Ugo Zeman. And we worked both with the French government and with Ugo Zeman's heirs to negotiate the loan of the work. That painting was restituted this past July. And so in a lot of ways, it's the most sort of contemporary or present tense work in the exhibition because it has such a visceral and immediate relationship to Ugo Zeman's family. So that was always, you know, keeping in mind the stories of the original owners and, where possible, the stories of their descendants in the forefront. That really was kind of the guiding principle. And when you walk through the galleries, you know, it's the stories of the works of art that strike you. But of course, always it's the stories of the men and women who those works had belonged to and for whom they had very personal meaning.
We were discussing.
Yeah, and I would just add to that some of the works that you mentioned at the beginning, the Matisse, the Picasso, the Cezanne, were part of a storage depot that was located in Paris that the Nazis used to take their most prized artifacts or their most prized artworks. Many of them were actually considered degenerate at the time. And one of the reasons those works survive today is because of a very unassuming woman named Rose Valland, mm-hmm. who was a registrar who was actually working for the Louvre prior to the war, a very reserved, quiet, bespectacled woman. And the Nazis just decided to keep her on. She knew so much about art just to do cataloging and you know, back of house work. And what they didn't know is that she was keeping meticulous records on the inflows and outflows of works coming in and out of that depot, that she befriended truckers. She knew train routes. And she was really working for the French resistance. She was keeping meticulous records of those artworks and was really instrumental in being able to find them again after the war. So we really do want to make sure that as we're foregrounding these extraordinary objects, that we're also revealing some of the hidden stories. And of course, everybody thinks of the Monuments Men, but in fact, there were many women involved in this effort and many sort of quiet and unassuming people as well, just trying to do the best work they could.
We're discussing Afterlives, Recovering the Lost Stories of Looted Art. It's at the Jewish Museum. I'm speaking with the exhibit's curators, Darcy Alexander and Sam Sakharov. So, Sam, I'm going to ask you to give us a little art history lesson, a history slash art history lesson here.
Sure.
What do we know about why the Nazis placed so much emphasis on looting art?
Oh, well, you know, there are many facets there. Some of the motivations were sort of ideological. We know a lot about sort of the category of degenerate art, and the Nazis sort of used that term to refer to art that we would consider modern or avant-garde. In many cases, those were paintings and sculptures that had a kind of utopian or universalist idea or message that could be sort of art that was sort of looking forward to a kind of a future moment in history when, you know, all classes would join, or any of these sort of utopian avant-garde projects that, you know, those were seen to conflict with the Nazis' own sort of brutal nationalist project. There was also often just a kind of base economic interest involved. Works of art were looted and they could be sold on the international market. So a work of art that the Nazis themselves had deemed degenerate and sort of offensive for that reason would be sold to help raise funds for the Reich. And in other cases, works would be looted in order to, you know, furnish the walls of a Nazi officer. There was also, of course, a massive campaign to loot Jewish cultural property, whether that be ceremonial objects, as Darcy mentioned before, books, sacred texts, Torah scrolls, and that all, of course, belonged to a sort of another aspect of the Nazi project, which was really to destroy Jewish culture. As you can imagine, much of that material was, in fact, destroyed. Countless books were pulped. Ceremonial objects were melted down for their silver. Some Jewish cultural property was preserved in so-called research institutions, anti-Semitic libraries, and things of that nature, where they were sort of studied to answer what the Nazis called the Jewish question. So there were many, many aspects that contributed to looting, from sort of ideological concerns down to sort of the most sort of base forms of plunder. And we really try to address all aspects of looting, including, you know, touching on all of those aspects of this history.
Darcy, German Expressionism was heavily targeted by Nazi censors. What did they find so objectionable about this style of art?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to what Sam was describing earlier about what was considered degenerate. Mm. That was anything that sort of revealed a kind of bohemian lifestyle, if you will. A number of the nude canvases that we have in the show are, you know, of the what you would call German Expressionist vein. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it was very complicated. On the one hand, you may have an artist early in his career, her career, who was celebrated as a forward thinker, and then 5 years later is lambasted as a degenerate. So I think one of the things that we found so fascinating about the show is that there were so many factors that went into how particular artists were singled out. You know, for example, we have this wonderful painting by a German Jewish artist named Otto Freundlich, which is this big, colorful, abstract painting made up of different colored blocks, blacks and pinks and reds. And he was, because he was labeled as degenerate and his work was placed on the cover of the Degenerate Art Catalog, which was the big show that the Nazis did in 1937, he was very, very well known. And he had to run into hiding with his wife. He escaped to the Pyrenees and was tracked down and eventually sent to the camps and killed. So, you know, it wasn't just that degeneracy or the degenerate artist was a classification that would describe the look of a particular work. It was actually a designation that was given to real people who were behind the making of those works. And artists, and of course, Jewish artists in particular, were very directly targeted.
Sam, was there a kind of art that the Nazis were interested in promoting?
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is, you always want to be sort of careful here, mm-hmm. to point out that these traits do not belong to the artworks themselves. They are attributed by the Nazis to the artworks. But, you know, in a lot of cases, they were the Nazis were drawn to works that we would consider to be sort of classical or conventional. And in a lot of cases, they were most drawn to things like history paintings. That is to say, works of art that sort of represented a moment from antiquity or from earlier European history. And the Nazis really did see themselves as the inheritors of European history. Mm. They were setting out to forcibly take over the continent. And that also involved taking over representations of, you know, these antique scenes. So one of the paintings that we show is an incredible work by the French painter Claude Lorrain. That shows a moment from antiquity when Emperor Constantine is encountering his rival Maxentius. And you can imagine the Nazis sort of, really physically grabbing this canvas and with it the right to say what does and does not count as legitimate European culture. That was one of the aspects that would make a painting attractive to them and something that they would steal show in their own galleries or museums.
I'm speaking with curators Darcy Alexander and Sam Sakharov. The name of the show at the Jewish Museum is Afterlives, Recovering the Lost Stories of Looted Art. Sam, there are two paintings by Matisse in this exhibit, Girl in the Yellow and Blue with Guitar and Daisies, and both were stolen from a Paris-based collector and dealer, Paul Rosenberg. Why was he such a target?
Well, Rosenberg was really one of... Sure, yeah. Rosenberg was really one of the preeminent Parisian dealers of modern art. He represented Matisse, but also Picasso, Braque, Leger. His gallery in the heart of Paris really was kind of an epicenter of modernism, not only in France, but in Europe generally. And Paul knew that he was on the top of the list of Jewish collectors who would be targeted when the Nazis invaded. So he and his family managed to flee from Paris to Bordeaux shortly before the Nazis invaded. And yeah, as you mentioned, we have the sort of honor of showing two paintings by Henri Matisse that were stolen from Rosenberg from his property in Bordeaux. Rosenberg's story is absolutely incredible. He managed to flee to New York, actually with the assistance of Alfred Barr, at that time the director of the Museum of Modern Art. But his son, Alexander, in fact, did not flee with his family. He instead joined the Free French Forces. And he was one of a very small handful of soldiers who liberated a very famous train in late August 1944. They thought that the train would be filled with Jewish hostages that the Nazis were planned to use as they fled, but when they threw open the boxcar door, they found that the train was in fact filled with art, including dozens of paintings that Alexander recognized from his father's collection.
That's I was going to ask you about that story. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Stunning.
Yeah,
right.
I did want to ask a little bit about a group called the Jewish Cultural Reconstruction. Darcy, can you take that one, or is that Sam?
Sure. No, I'm happy to speak to it because it does underscore, you know, this other part of the show, which is so important, which is like to counteract the kind of narrative about Nazi looting with really talking about the extraordinary efforts of the recovery effort. So, you know, halfway through the show, there's an installation of beautiful ceremonial objects that include some works from our collection at the Jewish Museum, Torah pointers, beautiful metalwork, Hanukkah lamps. And they came through to the museum under the auspices of the Jewish Cultural Reconstruction, which was basically an organization that helped to salvage works and get them out of Europe during the intensity of the looting that was happening, as we said earlier, not just in private homes and in museums, but in synagogues as well. So a number of very important intellectuals, including Hannah Arendt, who's a political theorist, a well-known figure to us here in the United States, was working in collaboration with this organization, which was in turn part of a government agency that would locate, track, and bring works out of Europe and in many cases to the Jewish Museum storage rooms, because we acted as a storage depot. And the idea of the JCR was really that by saving these works, you were not only preserving the history of those communities, but that these objects could then go out and foster and cultivate new Jewish communities. So this combination, which I think is very palpable in the exhibition, of preserving objects in order for future generations to benefit from their beauty, their spirituality, and their history. And that's very much part of the ethos of the JCR, which is, as I said, really at the core of the show itself.
And Sam, before we let you go, can you tell us a bit about these works that you commissioned to create contemporary art for this exhibit? What was your hope with that?
Yeah, well, we felt that it was important to address not only sort of the history sort of as something that belonged sort of in the past, but really as something that, as Darcy had sort of mentioned before, is still very much unfolding. You know, as the number of Holocaust survivors continues to dwindle, we felt the need to present this material and this history in a new way and engage new generations in sort of reflecting on these subjects. And one of the ways that we did that was, as you say, by commissioning four contemporary artists to really consider the subject and the themes from a contemporary perspective. Each of the artists that we worked with has a sort of established history engaging with this material. In some cases, their work sort of is archival in nature. They're very familiar with these kinds of documents. In other cases, they have deep family relationships. So this history is part of their history. It's part of the history of their mothers and fathers, grandfathers and grandmothers. And so we felt that, it was important to extend this conversation into the present and working with contemporary artists who bring, as you know, different aspects to the discussion was really important to us.
The name of the exhibit is Afterlives, Recovering the Lost Stories of Looted Art. I've been speaking with Darcy Alexander and Sam Sakharov, curators of the exhibit, which is at the Jewish Museum. Darcy and Sam, thank you so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.